Imagine being able to buy your milk, meat, flowers, and bread all from farmers within 100 miles of you. Sounds tough? Not so, says Rainey Thiemer of the Green Top Market in Bloomington.
We wanted to be located in an area where we can provide access to healthy foods for lower income families. And by putting Green Top where we are shrinking the size of the food desert in town on the west side.
And everyone knows this jingle, right?
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
While neighbors here in Bloomington Normal are starting to wonder where the insurance company will be with the announcement of another round of major layoffs, we talk about the past, present, and future of State Farm in Central Illinois and beyond. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st, our special live broadcast from the Green Top Grocery in Bloomington Normal. Stay tuned. We'll get started just after this news update. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're here in Bloomington Normal this week having a series of conversations about this area of the state. Today, we're at the Green Top Grocery in Bloomington. If you're in the area, please stop by. We're going to be here, of course, all this hour. It's a new co-op just east of downtown Bloomington with an emphasis on local foods. You can find produce, bread, dairy, even flowers from vendors within 100 miles of this Central Illinois location. And it's a location in a USDA-certified food desert. We're going to talk about that more in a minute, but first let me introduce the marketing manager here at Green Top, Rainey Thiemer. Hi, Rainey. Welcome to the 21st. Thanks for having us here today.
Hi. Thank you so much for being here.
So I wonder if you can explain what co-op is, first of all, for people who may not be familiar with the concept.
Yeah, absolutely. So Green Top Grocery is a grocery co-op, and so what that means is that we're owned by the community. We don't have a CEO. We're just owned by 1,742 people in our local community here.
And do you have to be an owner to shop here?
Absolutely not. Everybody is welcome to shop here, but anybody can become an owner.
And do owners have to work in the co-op?
No, they don't.
And what was the idea behind creating Green Top here in this location?
Great. We chose this location specifically because it was in a USDA-certified food desert. We were right on the edge, so we've shrunk the food desert by a mile. So it's a mile farther west now. It's not completely eliminated, but it has been shrunk. And then we also chose this location because of the location to the Constitution Trail, which allows bikers and walkers to come to the store. And we're also on the a couple of bus lines.
And so this was how many years in the making?
5 years in the making from the time it became an idea to the time we open our doors. And we're actually at our 1 year anniversary, May 5th.
Congratulations.
Thank
almost
you.
There, right?
Yes, almost there.
And so I think when people think about organic, when they think about a co-op, they think that's expensive. And so they think it's sort of a luxury. And I wanted to ask you particularly what you think about, how important was it for you? You mentioned that this area was a food desert. What does it look like for customers on all sort of levels of income who are shopping here?
Well, our prices sometimes are a little higher, and a lot of that has to do with our buying power. Because we're smaller, we can't purchase as many units as other larger stores can, where you get the big discounts. But we do have a couple programs in place. One we're starting soon called Co-op Essentials, where we'll make staples more affordable. A lot of our other prices, such as our organic produce, is very competitive. So if you look at organic produce at conventional stores, you'll see that we're similar or better prices even. And then we have a Snap Match program, which really benefits our low-income families in the neighborhoods. And what this is anyone who has a link card can come into Green Top and they can purchase anything that's link eligible, and we will match up to $25 per day. And those vouchers that we give out are good on only locally grown produce and can be used at our farmers market as well.
And so as you're finding that, and are you actually the first grocery store in Illinois to have a program like this?
That is correct. We are the first grocery store in the state of Illinois who has offered this program. We are doing this in conjunction with the experimental station out of Chicago. There will be, I think, one more grocery store in Illinois that will launch soon, but we were the first to start this.
And now what are you seeing in terms of traffic of even SNAP recipients who are coming in and shopping here?
Yeah, we've actually tripled our EBT and SNAP benefits or transactions since December. So the program got put in place in January, and we've tripled the amount of sales.
We're broadcasting live from the Green Top Grocery Store in Bloomington. I've been speaking with marketing manager Rainey Thiemer. Rainey, it's a really important thing for you all, I know, to have local. You've been talking about how many different local vendors do you use here at Green Top, or do you all source?
A great question. Over the last year, we've sourced from over 70 local producers within 100 miles of our store.
What's that sound, by the way?
That is our peanut butter grinder.
Okay, so someone's buying peanut butter. Yeah. It's not coffee. I was like, is that coffee or peanut butter? Okay. And so, I'm sorry, remind me again the number of people that you have?
A little bit over 70, about 71, 72 in the last, over the last year within 100 miles of the store.
And for the people who are coming in here, what do they say to you for your newest customers and your owners about why it's important for them to be shopping here?
A lot of people really find value in our local items. They put that focus on shopping local, keeping our money in our local economy, and knowing where our food came from. That's a big value for a lot of our customers.
That's Rainey Thiemer of Green Top Grocery. As she mentioned, a big part of their mission is to include local food providers, and I'm joined now by a few of them. Kitty Bishop works at Prairie Earth Farm. That's a multi-generational 350 certified organic farm in Atlanta, Illinois, which is about 30 miles from Bloomington. Audra Wyant is from Finding Eminence Farm in Lexington, which is about 20 miles from here. They specialize in cut flowers and salad greens. Harold Wilkin is also with us from Janie's Farm Organics. It's a 2,400-acre farm in Danforth, Illinois, just south of Kankakee. All of you, thanks for being here. Welcome to the 21st.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
On the line, we should add also from his meat and dairy farm in Fairbury, which is about an hour from Bloomington, is Matt Kilgus of Kilgus Farmstead. Hi, Matt. Welcome to the 21st.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, Katie, I wonder if I could start with you. How did you get involved in farming? Organic farming, I should say, right?
I met my husband, Hans, at State Farm. We both worked full-time in claims, and we were both pretty discontent with the corporate culture. We knew it wasn't right for us, and Hans's dad had this farm where he was raising organic grains and livestock, and for whatever reason, we just took a big plunge and decided to grow vegetables. I know that seems like crazy. There should be more of a connection, but we just took a leap of faith and did it.
Audra, same thing for you?
Yeah, actually our story is very similar, where we were avid gardeners, we lived in town, and we had always kind of wanted more, and so we started looking at properties and bought the first place that we found, and the rest is history. So.
And you, Audra, how long have you all been farming?
We've been farming since 2015.
And Katie, how about you?
8 years. I can't remember how long ago that was, but it's been about 8 years.
And Harold, that's not the case for you. You've been a farmer all of your life.
Right. Right.
And when did you switch to organic farming from conventional farming?
It was in 2005, when would have been our first certification year.
And what prompted the switch for you?
Well, I was disgruntled with conventional farming. My son wanted to come back to the farm. He was young at that time, but it was just a natural fit for us, and I felt like it was important for him not to handle herbicides and pesticides.
Matt, Kilgus Farm is a name our listeners might know from dining out at restaurants. You can find your products everywhere from Alinea in Chicago to Beccaro in Champaign. What kind of products do you sell at Green Top, Matt?
We do our fluid milk products. We have our whole 2% skim, gallons, half gallons, and pints is mainly the milk side of the business is what we have at Green Top.
Milk. So I saw I was wandering the ice cream aisle, and I was tempted. I was almost about to buy some ice cream earlier this morning. Harold, do you actually mill all of Katie's wheat? Is that correct?
Yes, we have a relationship where Katie's family raises turkey red wheat. It's a heritage variety, and so they raise wheat for us to mill. Then we also have hard red winter, hard red spring, soft red winter that we mill as well.
And what do you think your customers are looking for when they're shopping for your grains and your flours?
Well, they're looking for taste, quality. Ours is all stone milled. So it has all of the minerals, nutrients, It's not an enriched, enhanced flour.
Katie, why was it important for you to do, Harold, talking about the heritage wheats that you all are growing, why was that important for you all to bring those back?
Well, I have to be honest with you that my father-in-law and my husband manage the wheat. I'm much more of a vegetable girl. But I think it's about diversity and having a lot of different crops on our farm. We don't want to be a monoculture. We want to have a lot of different crops. And so having those varieties of wheat interplanted with our livestock and our vegetable crops helps us maintain fertility.
Audra, you produce another kind of flour. That's the other kind of flour that we're and also microgreens?
Yes.
And why did you decide to produce those in particular?
We saw that there were large holes in the market for those two products. And so we kind of threw those ideas against the wall, and they stuck for us, and they've been working out great for us. So we grow cut flowers, and then we also grow microgreens in an indoor growing space.
And so for your cut flowers, is this time of year a little tough for you?
Yes. Well, I think it's a tough year for all farmers. I don't want to speak for all farmers, but I'm going to, saying that, yes, this time of year is tough for us just because the weather's unpredictable, and also wind is a factor with our farm because we don't have a lot of wind blocks, so we have to kind of get creative and making sure that our products aren't totally decimated by the wind.
Katie, what does this time of year look for you guys at Prairie Earth? What is it like?
It's really exciting and wonderful and intense. Our crew is back, and we're planting everything every day. We're working in the greenhouse. This weather has made things a little challenging. I think we're just about 3 weeks behind on planting, so we'll see what happens. But I'm hopeful it means that the bug pressure won't be as bad because it's been so cold. So
yeah, Harold, how has this year gone for you? Has it been a tough start?
Actually, it's we got our spring wheat in 3 to 4 weeks ago, which is actually early. We caught a window, but you know, I've been going around watching the snowfall, and it's been kind of interesting, but it hasn't affected the wheat at all yet.
And that's Harold Wilkin. He's an organic farmer and mill owner with Janie's Farm Organic. We've also been speaking with Audra Wyant. She's with Finding Eminence Farm in Lexington. Katie Bishop is also here with us from Prairie Earth Farm in Atlanta, Illinois. All of them supply Green Top Grocery, where we're broadcasting live from today. Matt Kilgus is also on the line with us from Kilgus Farmstead. Matt, you've been on family. You've been farming. Your family has been farming on the same land in central Illinois since the 50s. Is that correct?
Yeah, the farm was started by my grandfather back in the 50s, and he started dairying, and then fast forward a ways into the 2000s, it was my uncle and I, and he had a couple boys interested in coming back to the operation, and that's kind of when we started to look at diversification, what we could do to add value to our product. You know, we really didn't think the answer was just milking a bunch more cows or, you know, just farming more land. Really not an option either. So that's when we looked at different ways we could diversify, and we knew that there was a need for a fluid milk in Illinois, as there were a couple cheeses, but there was nobody doing a farmstead milk in Illinois when we started.
And how have you had to change that business model then? Was it to create the model that you are now to continue to be successful 50 years later up till 2018?
Yeah, we felt definitely that, you know, didn't know just the small dairy farm our size, just try to support a couple families just wasn't necessarily going to work long term. And so I guess the goal of doing this was to support a couple more families, which it has done. And in turn, we have the milk business, but it's kind of blossomed into a meat business, too, with beef and pork and so forth. That's allowed us to even bring, you know, more people into the farming operation.
Harold, you also, all of you run family operations, but Harold, I wanted to ask you about Janie's Farm Organics in Danforth. As we mentioned, it's flours and grains. People can buy here at the Green Top Co-op, but a lot of the grains that you produce in Illinois actually aren't farmed for people. When we look at across the industry for agriculture, a lot of the grains that are farmed here are feed for other things. Was it important for you to be producing grains that people are eating?
Well, one of the main reasons that we built the flour mill was I watched a load of my soft red winter wheat leave on a semi to go to New York for chicken feed. And I went, this is nuts. We have all these people who eat bread, eat food in this food shed, and we should be working towards feeding people. And so that was 4 years ago, and it took us 3 years to decide and get things up and running and built. And so now we're working towards becoming 100% food.
Katie, for you all, was it tough to get your business started?
It was tough to get started in farming. It wasn't tough to get started in business. I mean, I think building the relationships with our customers just came really natural to me because I was so grateful for them, because they're the reasons that Hans and I got to leave State Farm, you know. And so that part of the business, very natural, very easy. Farming has had a ton of learning curves. Being a boss has had a ton of learning curves. That's never easy. So it's been challenging in that part of it, but we feel like some of it's come really natural too.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Katie Bishop. She's the farmer and co-owner from Prairie Earth Farm in Atlanta, Illinois. Audra Wyant is with us as well from Finding Eminence Farm in Lexington. Harold Wilkin is an organic farmer and mill owner with Janie's Farm Organic. Kilgus Farmsteads, Matt Kilgus, is also on the line with us. And Katie, you mentioned State Farm. We're going to be talking about State Farm later in the hour. Stay tuned to the 21st. You're listening to our special broadcast live from the Green Top Grocery in Bloomington.
The 21st is supported by the Beckman Institute for Advanced Science and Technology, presenting Sandra Singh Low, host of the NPR.org podcast, The Lowdown on Science, for the Smith Group JJR Lecture, noon on Friday, April 20th, in the Beckman Institute Auditorium.
Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're broadcasting live today from the Green Top Grocery in Bloomington with special thanks to our partner station, GLT. I've been speaking with local food growers, millers, and producers, along with Rainey Themer from the Green Top. And we've got folks who have come out. By the way, if you're in Bloomington, you're welcome to come down, join our broadcast. Jim's here. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the 21st. Jim, did you want to make a comment about Green Top Grocery? Why do you shop here?
I shop here because it's the kind of food that I've always wanted to see my family have available to them. And I really wanted to thank the farmers. And I've known some of you, met some of you before, and I belong to a CSA here in town. We also shop the local farmers market on weekends as well, too. But you have changed a lot by what you've done for us and for the store, as well as I believe the store is also helping you. Katie, at the owners' meeting, you had a good story about how economically things are changing for your business, your farm, as a result of this store. And the same is happening, I think, for other farms, too. There's a ripple effect because this store exists.
Jim, thank you so much for sharing that. Katie, I wonder if I could just ask you about how you think your business has changed.
So we have been able to provide all full-time staff on our farm increase in pay to get them up to a living wage. Our next goal is to be able to pay for sick time because that's really important. So we didn't start off, you know, being able to farm full time, we had to work full time and
because
farm.
You needed health insurance too, I imagine.
Because we needed health insurance. And so my husband was the first one to leave State Farm to farm, and then I had to stay on just to maintain health insurance for us. It is because of the co-op in Urbana, actually. It's that co-op relationship that allowed me to leave. But it was also because of the Affordable Health Care Act that was passed. It made it much more affordable for us to get insurance. And I think the Affordable Health Care Act also impacts my employees' ability to farm and follow their dreams because they don't have to worry about health insurance either.
Mm, so that's been an important part of you being able to do what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Well, looks like we've got another person in the audience here, Kathy, who wants to make a comment. Hi, Kathy. Welcome to the 21st. What's your comment?
Thank you. Well, I just wanted to say I love Green Top Grocery. And I'm just amazed at the quality of the products, but especially the produce that we have here. And if you haven't tried it yet, if you cook with some of the things from Prairie Earth or some of the other grocers, there's just no comparison to the taste. And so I also want to say I'm so appreciative of all the work that they do. We've visited the farm before the store opened. We visited two of our farms. And we know how much hard work they put in, and we do appreciate all of their efforts.
Kathy, thanks for the comment. Katie, Harold, Audra, if you all could weigh in here. Katie, let's start with you. To Kathy's point about fresh farm produce, do you think that's a luxury? I think for a lot of Americans, they do think of it as a luxury of something, especially if it's organic, it's too expensive for them to afford.
Yeah, I think mass-produced food is much cheaper in stores when it comes in a can or in a frozen meal. But when we're talking about the value of food, I think fresh, local, and even organic food has such a higher value in terms of nutrition, in terms of the money staying within the community, that I don't see it as a luxury at all. I see it as something that's very affordable for all of us if we just understand the economics of it a little bit more.
Harold?
Well, I'm a good example. I grew up in the Wonder Bread generation, and I call that a handle for peanut butter and jelly. But now that I've become a miller, an organic farmer, I can't eat that type of bread anymore. And what I find is that because our wheat flour is more nutritious and the way the bread is made, it doesn't take near as much to satisfy you, taste and fullness. I buy a loaf of bread, it lasts almost a week just because of the quality.
Audra?
Yeah, I mean, for us and our microgreens, to continue with what Harold is saying, our microgreens are packed with nutrients. It's a tiny little plant that has all the nutrients for the much larger adult version of it. So, yeah, I don't think it's a luxury. I think it's something that has a large economic value as well.
Matt, what about you? As we're thinking about Kilgus Farm and your dairy and your meat.
Yeah, as far as a more wholesome product, and as far as the milk, we milk Jersey cows, and the Jersey cow does give a more nutrient dense milk. It's higher in protein and calcium, and us being able to just have a single source product like that and put the milk from our cows in the jugs, feel there is a difference. And, interesting point, I guess, right now with some of the stores, having milk as their loss leader and below $1 a gallon, it does put some pressure on the other milk suppliers or people like us. But I think if people are educated and realize what they're getting still for an affordable price, they can look beyond that.
Right, Matt. I wonder if you're concerned about the amount of people drinking maybe almond milk or soy milk or coconut milk, all the alternatives to dairy that are kind of out there these days. Is that putting pressure on your business?
It is. That is a growing thing. And I think as dairy farmers, that's one thing is, not just us as producers, but the dairy industry as a whole is trying to work at, some of those other products, not being able to label themselves as milk because it's truly not a dairy, product. And so that is along with some of the pricing wars going on with milk locally, the alternative milks is an issue also.
Audra Winan, I wanted to ask you, we're coming up a big time of year for weddings, graduations. Mother's Day is right around the corner. I know that's kind of the biggest day for flowers in the U.S. I wonder, as people think about that, what you want people to know about mass flower production versus the kind of flower production that you all are doing at Finding Eminence?
Sure. I think the main thing is that there are a lot of flowers that I think have been forgotten about because there are dahlias, for example, are a main flower that we grow. They can't be shipped very well. They have to remain in water. And so there are also a lot of heirloom varieties that I think have been forgotten about. So I think people have gotten really used to, like, baby's breath and roses, and there are a lot more wild, natural-looking flowers that are more unique and provide a better gift, especially for Mother's Day.
And when you're thinking about that in Illinois, we're thinking more about wildflowers and other native, maybe, flowers to Illinois. What comes to mind for you?
Coneflowers are a big prairie flower. It's not native to Illinois, but zinnias are another flower that kind of looks like that wild flower. I think people also don't understand that we can grow more high-end looking flowers here right on the prairie, like lisianthus and dahlias and ranunculus and anemones, too. So,
and we have people tuning in from all over the state, so I wonder what you want them to keep in mind when they want to think about, and I'm going to pose this final question to all of you, what they want to keep in mind if they want to support local growers. Audra, let's start with you.
Just to keep in mind that it goes directly to our families and our businesses. I mean, it doesn't go to large corporations that are mass producing things, and it just helps put money back into the local economy.
Katie?
I would encourage people to come out to the farms and visit and see where their food comes from. Most farmers really want to share that part of their life with you.
Harold, are people welcome to come visit you?
Yes, we're an open book. So we encourage people to come and see our farm, tour the mill. They can find us at the mill at janiesfarm.com, and they can get a hold of us and come see what we do.
Matt, any final words for what you advice for folks if they want to think about supporting local growers?
I think to reiterate what some of the others have said, yes, we welcome people to come out on our tours. We do different farm events. Come see the process from start to finish. And I think probably like all the others speaking today, that, you know, none of us have anything to hide. That's our strong point. We want people to see the process from start to finish. And that's something that, you know, if you do not buy local, it's not an opportunity you get when you buy the national brands.
Thanks for that. That's Matt Kilgus with Kilgus Farmstead. I want to thank Harold Wilkin, who's an organic farmer and mill owner, as he mentioned, Janie's Farm Organics, Audra Wyant with Finding Eminence Farm, Kitty Bishop also with Prairie Earth Farm. Thank you, all of you, for being with me here on the 21st. We're going to tweet out all the information, by the way. If you want to find out more information about these folks in particular, this will be at our website, 21stshow.org. Thank you to all of you, and a big thanks, of course, to Greentop Grocery, our host for today, and our guest from there, marketing director Rainey Theiner. Thank you guys. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
So
thank
much.
You.
You're listening to the 21st. We're broadcasting today live from Greentop Grocery in Bloomington. We mentioned one company that looms large over this town, and that's State Farm. And if you recall that jingle, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there, right? Well, it's more than just that, because if you live in Illinois, this insurance company is probably a large part of your life, one way or another. They're the largest auto insurer in the state. And if you live in the Bloomington Normal area where we're broadcasting right now, State Farm might provide more than just your home or car insurance. It could provide your job. It's the city's largest employer, but last month State Farm announced it was cutting almost 900 jobs in IT positions at the Bloomington headquarters as part of a, quote, realignment and downsizing of the department. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking about this live from Greentop, about how this is going to affect the community. But first, Charlie Moore is president and CEO of the McLean County Chamber of Commerce. I had a chance to sit down with him yesterday afternoon at WGLT, and I started by asking him about the role State Farm plays in the local economy here in Bloomington Normal.
Well, State Farm has indeed been a good neighbor to McLean County, Bloomington Normal forever, since its inception, and they continue to do so. You know, they are definitely a driving force in our economy, and the reason why Bloomington Normal, I would say, in part, has been so successful over the decades. You know, and so now, you know, State Farm makes some changes to their operating. You know, as a chamber of commerce for a business community, businesses have to change to stay relevant, and so their business models continue to change. And so we as a community, you know, as a chamber of commerce, I'll start and say, you know, our job is to how do we help support them and what changes they have to make that are relevant for their organization. But also then to a community, you know, there's a number of people here who are employees or they work for companies that are perhaps do supply chain or are engaged with State Farm in other ways. And so, you know, our goal is how do we continue to forge forward, you know, in spite of maybe some of the rumors that are on the street and what people might be thinking that don't know because they're third party kind of conversations that are taking place. And moreover, you know, what do we do to come together to make sure that we continue to have McLean County be insulated from all the things that we have been for a very long while? And so that's really what we're looking at right now is as a Chamber of Commerce, all the businesses that are here, how do we continue to unite? How do we continue to pull together? How do we continue to intentionally insulate our economy, if you will, and allow us to forge forward?
What would you say to business owners who maybe are worried about State Farm and its presence in the community? And I'm thinking about business owners, as you said, maybe in the supply chain, folks who run restaurants or dry cleaners or other industries that depend on State Farm employees.
Sure. So right now, so we know a couple things. We know that their headcount's going to retain around the 15,000 mark. Which is where it has been for a while. Sure, they've had some subcontractors and some other folks, and so their numbers have ebbed and flowed. But right now they continue to tell us that the 15,000 will be the rough headcount, if you will, that State Farm will continue to have employees in Bloomington Normal. You know, and so right now some of that's still a bit of the unknown. If I had the crystal ball, I'd certainly like to be much more concrete on what I would see is what's going to happen. But as a community, I think that, you know, we have been successful for such a long while, perhaps unintentionally as a community. Things came, people came, businesses grew. And now what we have to do is make sure that we're actually paying close attention to how we are intentional and moving together as a community forward, knowing how we're going to use, as you talked about, the dry cleaners and the restaurants and the businesses that have been here supportive of the community as a whole, but of course also to State Farm employees. And so, you know, now we're really focused on something that's really specifically called the BN Advantage. And the BN Advantage is an economic development and marketing strategy that has really been in effect for about 2 years. And the goal of that whole strategy is how do we diversify the McLean County economy, the Bloomington Normal economy? Because as I mentioned just a moment ago, we have been successful for a very long while in spite of ourselves. And perhaps there have been some things that were done intentionally, some things that were unintentional, some things that just happened. And oh, hey, that worked. And yet we really don't know why.
That's Charlie Moore, President and CEO of the McLean County Chamber of Commerce. We're going to be airing a longer conversation with Charlie tomorrow about advanced manufacturing and how McLean County is preparing workers for that industry. Right now, though, with a focus on State Farm, on the line with us from Chicago is Steve Daniels, a senior reporter with Crane Chicago Business. Hey, Steve, welcome to the 21st.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Steve, I wonder if we can begin by reminding everyone who's tuning in throughout the state, how big is State Farm's presence throughout Illinois? Let's start with homeowners insurance.
Yeah, they are huge both in homeowners and auto. They insure roughly one in every three cars on vehicles on the road, and homeowners is a roughly in the same ballpark, might be a little bit lower market share, but they're the overwhelmingly largest insurer of both homes and cars in Illinois.
That's Steve Daniels. He's a senior reporter with Crane Chicago Business. here with me at the Green Top Grocery in Bloomington is WGLT's Charlie Schlenker. Hey, Charlie, thanks for being with us as well.
Good morning.
So, Charlie, when we're talking about the company's presence in Bloomington Normal, for people outside the area, I wonder if you can put this in perspective for us. How big of a jobs producer has State Farm historically been here in Bloomington Normal?
13 to 15% right now, and in some eras as high as 20% of the workforce. So it's in all senses a company town, in the way that Caterpillar has been a company town in Peoria, or Archer Daniels Midland or A.E. Staley in Decatur. They loom large both culturally and as an economic driver.
And what kind of jobs are we talking about, Charlie?
All over the map. We have the maintenance jobs, the subcontracting jobs, the cleaning jobs. We have IT. We have computer security. We have claims jobs. We have executive jobs. It's all over the map. Generally, State Farm has been driven by college graduates, so the jobs tend to be higher wage than normal, and that has boosted both the average educational attainment in the community and the average income.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Charlie Schlinker from WGLT. Steve Daniels is also on the line with us. He covers the insurance industry for Crane Chicago Business. We'll continue our broadcast live from the Green Top Grocery in Bloomington after this short break. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and today we're broadcasting live from Greentop Grocery in Bloomington Normal. Right now, we're talking about the big employer in town, that's State Farm. My guests on the line from Chicago, insurance reporter Steve Daniels covers the insurance industry for Crane Chicago Business. Here with me at Greentop is Charlie Schlinker. His news director at WGLT has covered State Farm for a long time. And Charlie, the big news here last month was announcing of restructuring of certain departments, specifically IT. This is going to result in a number of jobs being cut from Bloomington. Where are we at with that job number right now, Charlie?
900 or so leaving and 500 or so coming in other claims jobs. State Farm Bank is undergoing a restructuring, and nationwide about an 18% cut as well. And that is actually going to add about 100 jobs to Bloomington. So it's all part of the normal restructuring that the digital disruption has produced in a lot of companies. But the difference for the emotional environment of Bloomington Normal is that it's the first time it's happened here with such a major employer.
Right. So I know that this is always kind of the talk of people worrying about would a company not necessarily leave, but I mean, it's such a looms large over the rest of the economy here. What are folks saying about this restructuring now? Are people worried?
They are worried, and the Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development types are trying to view it as an opportunity to use some of the people who don't leave the community after they've been downsized or retired to attract yet other businesses, because these are business professionals, they have skills, and there ought to be an opportunity, so the case goes, for that. But there are lots of communities in this sort of case. There is a lot of nervousness, even though State Farm has been good over the last couple of years, about saying, as Steve mentioned, that they are going to hold steady at about 15,000, or as Charlie Moore mentioned, rather.
Mm-hmm. And just a note to our audience, we did invite State Farm to join our conversation today. They did decline, but the offer is always open for them. Steve, I wonder if you can place in context what's going on, particularly not just for State Farm, but other insurers. It's been a really tough year or two for doing business. Why is that?
Well, for State Farm, it depends on the insurer, but I'll speak to them specifically. For State Farm, they have seen, particularly on the auto insurance side, very sizable underwriting losses over the last couple of years. 2016 was a record $7 billion underwriting loss, which was kind of staggering, even for a company their size and with their financial strength. Last year, they improved after, some fairly substantial rate hikes in many states around the country, including Illinois, and they reported a little over a $2 billion underwriting loss. Now, the company is in perfectly fine financial health, mainly just because of its reserves are very, very strong, and that's one of the things that's very impressive about State Farm is that they are able to withstand these cycles that can affect them.
And Charlie, as you're thinking about jobs being cut, but jobs being added, it sounds like lots of activity of people moving in and out of the Bloomington-Normal area. Is this having an impact on the real estate market?
It is. The real estate professionals are thinking it will increase the inventory of the higher-end houses and decrease the inventory of the mid-range houses. That comes with the assumption that the IT jobs moving out come with a higher average salary than the claims jobs and other jobs, banking jobs that are moving in. State Farm says they're not so sure about that, but they don't have hard data either. Also, their restructuring isn't done. They're looking at all sorts of other areas of the company. At some point, they're going to look at the agency structure, too, which is a structural disadvantage for them compared to the rest of the industry.
Well, speaking of real estate, Charlie, I wanted to ask you about the historic State Farm building in downtown Bloomington. Can you tell us about what's going on with that building and the changes that might be in store for it?
Yeah, that really complicates efforts to redevelop and revitalize downtown Bloomington for the city. It's been there since 1929. It's had four separate additions all the way to the 40s and 50s. It was the corporate headquarters for decades, and even then it was this iconic architectural spike in downtown. And so downtown's identity is also part of that. Last December, they moved out the last few jobs. It had been down to, at one point, it had been up to 900 people in that building. Now it's zero. We're seeing drops in activity in local businesses. Some have canceled lunch. Some restaurants have canceled lunch because they're no longer seeing the traffic. Other restaurants have seen maybe a 15 to 20% drop. So that's a worry, too. How can it be reused? There are lots of ideas floating around, including a city hall, a new city hall.
For Bloomington.
For Bloomington, a hotel. A couple of different specialty tenants that could take up maybe a third of the building, but really it's still too early to say. State Farm wants to sell it. They want to sell it to one person. That leaves open the possibility that could it be just somebody who buys it on spec and wants to sit on it and then resell it. Of course, if they wait too long, then the value goes down because the building begins to decay. So it's a moment of upheaval.
Lots to think about, and I know Charlie Schlinker from GLT, our partner station. Charlie, I know you and the rest of the team will be keeping an eye on this story. I want to thank you, along with Steve Daniels from Crane Chicago Business, for joining us. Steve, thanks for being with me as well. Charlie, thanks for being here.
Oh, your pleasure.
Sure, thanks.
We're going to end today's show by checking back in with someone who's previously been on the program. Last night, it was my pleasure to address the League of Women Voters of McLean County, and I was talking about women in politics and how they're making a difference, not just across the country, but right here in Illinois. That, of course, we have the Year of the Woman. We have projections of a record number of women running for political office at all levels of government, from Congress to city and town councils. And we thought we'd check back in with one person who's been in office for a year. She's also the first African-American to hold a seat on Normal's town council. Councilwoman Kimberly Cummings, welcome back to the 21st. It's nice to see you here in person with me.
Thanks for having me.
You were a graduate, I should mention, of Representative Sherry Bustos' Build the Bench program. Can you remind us about that program?
Yes, it's an awesome opportunity to learn how to get out here and be in a campaign. We learn everything from stump speeches to how to really tap into the voters and knowing who's voting and how do we approach them and talk about the issues that are being addressed when you're running for office. So,
why did you want to run for office? What was your motivation?
My motivation is certainly to be a voice for the community, specifically groups that may not have a voice, and to be a face. You know, we have a community that spoke on being diverse and inclusive, but a lot of our higher levels within the community didn't reflect diverse and inclusion at all. And so I challenged the community by running for office to say, if we're truly diverse and inclusive, then let's show it.
Now that you've been in office, it's been more than a year at this point, right?
It'll be a year, actually, May 1st.
Okay, so almost a year. Is it what you expected?
Oh, my gosh. It has been an amazing experience, and just having the opportunity to learn even more than, you know, I graduated with a bachelor's in political science, so you know the textbook to what, you know, what it's like to be in this position, but to actually sit in the seat and make some tough decisions, it's certainly eye-opening.
What did you think have been the tough decisions that you've had to deal with in this first year in office?
Number one, budget. That has been our biggest challenge and biggest hurdle. And I think not only our community is facing that, many communities, especially across the state of Illinois, are facing the challenge of what to do with our budgets to continue to have a balanced budget.
And declining sales tax revenue, I imagine that's a big issue also for Normal?
Yes, it is. Among, you know, there's a 2% now increase to receive those funds from the revenue that came down from the state. So that, you know, accompanied with many other things that we've faced in this community, now you have to look at, you know, how do you make those cuts and what's the right cuts?
Mm-hmm. Councilwoman Cummings, yesterday we also had a conversation on the 21st about the Welcoming City Ordinance. I wonder what your thoughts are on that, as I know that both the towns of Bloomington and Normal are having discussions right now about whether or not to create laws that would create additional protections for undocumented immigrants throughout Normal.
We are currently having conversations. Mostly it's been the staff at this point, and they have not come with their final recommendation to the council. But we are very aware and are being kept abreast of the conversations that are being had. And I've heard really good things, and I'm expecting to see something really great come out of the conversations in order to address some of the concerns with, you know, having a Welcoming Cities Ordinance.
So I wonder what it's been like to be in office and being in public life, what that's been like for you and for your family.
Oh, it's interesting, especially when you're part-time and you have a full-time job. And not only that, you know, I've always have continued to be very active and engaged in the community, as well as taking along some opportunities that come with the role at a more national level, specifically National League of Cities. I've currently gotten a little bit more involved with that. So it takes up a lot of time, and I'm grateful that I have a husband who understands.
Councilwoman Cummings, I wonder, as you ran for office and were elected before, we've seen so much conversation this year about women, and particularly we look at Springfield and the sexual harassment and so many conversations about how important it is for women to be holding office. What has it been like for you to be a politician while all of these conversations have been happening?
It's interesting and very exciting. When I initially put in, you know, my application to even run, we hadn't had Donald Trump win the election. And so the energy was slightly there, but not in the same way, because I think everybody walked away with the assumption that, you know, we were going to be historical and see Hillary Clinton win as the first woman or female president. And so to have that shift happen and that not happen, then I think it really charged us up as women to say, you know, what can we do? How do we make a difference? How do we really voice that we can do this? We have the opportunity and the ability to run things and have an impact. And so to see where it's going, I am excited, and I can't wait to see more of what happens. I'm also reading Dear Madam President, and it's an awesome book for anyone who's interested in politics and possibly running for office. But it shows the power and the power we have as women.
I'm speaking with Councilwoman Kimberly Cummings, and you're a Democrat. Do you feel like this needs to be a bipartisan effort, more women running for office?
Absolutely. I don't think that it should be singled out for whether you're just a Democrat. I think to have more women on both sides of the aisle is, you know, a great thing. And, you know, one of the things that does sadden me sometimes is where we've come as a country when we talk about partisanship. We no longer really float in that bipartisanship space. But I'm hoping if we get some women, we'll come to understand some more compromise.
What's your advice for women that are running for office? And the first time we've had a couple women, even in the audience today, I know who've told us that they're running for office for the first time as well. What's your advice to them?
Be encouraged, you know, keep fighting. It'll get tough at times. And, you know, you get questioned about everything, especially as a woman, like, you know, do you understand what it might, the impacts to your family? It has the same impacts for a man too, you know, but I think it's solved differently from a woman. But, you know, don't stop and never be discouraged. Continue on, and especially don't let age or anything like that ever deter you from something that you want to do.
That's Normal Town Council Councilwoman Kimberly Cummings. Thank you so much for being with me. I really appreciate you taking the time to come down and speak with us.
I appreciate you.
Does it for us today. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app. Search for The 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. If you follow us on Twitter, search for 21ST Show. We live tweet during the program with more analysis and background about what we're talking about. There's lots of pictures today of what it's like to set up a radio program from a grocery store. If you search on Facebook, you can search for The 21st to like us. You can also comment on what we're working on. You can post questions or comments that you'd like us to ask on air. All of those links, every other way to contact us, if you want to leave us a voicemail, if you'd like to send us an email, if you want to follow us on social media, all you have to remember is our website, 21stshow.org. We've got links, by the way, to all of the farmers that were on earlier. If you're curious in finding out a little bit more about the farmers that we spoke to who were featured on today's program, things like that are always at our website. We're produced by Libby Foster, Robin Lynn, and Alan Montesilio. Fatima Farha is our intern. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. Special thanks to Greentop Grocery for hosting us today and to our partner station, GLT, for all their help this week. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.